How about your networking?
Well, that's quite okay.
You spend
it's
some
improving.
Yeah, you spend yeah. some. You spend
I
some
spend
time
a lot
every
of
day.
Time externally. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it works.
It works. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
it's something that needs to grow, right?
It needs to grow, and that's why you're all here. You're not just here to get some more Microsoft information. You're here because there are other people. Try to remember them. Try to see them, and try to share with them. Okay. Shall we start your presentation? I think
yes.
we have.
We can start the movie, maybe. Yeah.
Okay, that will be even more
yeah.
important. Okay, let's see some images. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everybody. And thank you very much for your time. Thank you for being here in this next edition of i3 Connect. I love this movie. I really love this movie. I think many of you have already seen this one. It's actually a remake of an older version. It's an updated remake of an older version. But I truly love it. And especially because I think it's a perfect introduction for the theme of today. And that's cloud computing. And at the end of this movie, there was a question asked. What does this all mean? What it means, I believe, is that the world is changing. Our economy is changing fundamentally. And quicker and quicker and quicker. There's a lot of people who have written about this. A lot of authors, and I just want to pick out three, because these three I happen to have read. The first one is Chris Anderson. Chris Anderson is a chief editor of the magazine Wired in the States, and he's written a number of books. But interesting in his debate is that he describes a new model, economical model, that has found existence because of the internet. And he writes about the long tail. He writes about producing less of more, where the old model typically is producing a lot, an awful lot of one thing. That's the most economical model. He says, no, the internet makes that now niche markets become very interesting. And I'm going to give you an example of the music industry. Typically what happened in the old times, the big record bosses, the record labels, they would typically invite artists to do an audition. Yeah? What would they do? They come and play with their band, and these big record bosses would decide whether they'd give them a chance or not. And then they choose one singer, let's say Elvis Presley. They promote him heavily. They promote him worldwide, print a lot of records, set up a distribution mechanism worldwide, and this guy would become a star. But all the lesser gods would make no chance at all. Nobody would know them. They'd play in little bars. The model today is completely different. Look at Apple's model with iTunes, for example. The revenue they derive from the lesser known authors is as big as what they derive from the big hits. Because of the internet, just think about the revolution, just think about the impact of the internet, of this on the music industry. Second author I'd like to mention is Geert Nuls. And Geert Nuls is interesting, also just because he's very close to our door. He used to be the chief economist of Petercam. He's founded now his own company. It's Econopolis. And he's written a book which is called Econoshock. Interesting book, by the way. I would advise you to read it. And Geert Nuls refers to the internet as well. He refers typically to a number of shock waves that will impact our industry. He refers to the internet and ICT as an important player. He puts a lot of emphasis on green, but where he puts most of his emphasis, is towards the East. The power is really shifting towards the East, he says. If typically our economies, Western economies, are growing with less than 4% a year, these BRIC countries, for example, are growing with 9 to 10% a year. I myself was 5 months ago in India. And it's been 15 years since I was last there. I remember 15 years ago when I landed in Bombay. It was still called Bombay then. It's now Mumbai. I remember the door of the plane going open. And standing in this door, I would feel the heat, an awful heat, a humid heat. And I would smell. It would smell terribly. And I would go down the stairs of the airport towards the airport building, which was a little neaty building. And out of the airport, it was all chaos and dirt. That's just 15 years ago. I went back there now. It's completely changed. It's a very modern airport building. It's like in Zaventem. And I went from Mumbai to Hyderabad. It's the same. And the surroundings of the airport is completely different. Very modern infrastructure. It's completely different in 15 years' time. India is a country of contrasts. You see a lot of rich people, but you see many, many poor people. And I didn't check statistics, but if I would say 90% is poor and 10% is richer, I'm probably very close and I probably exaggerate. But the thing is that you see a lot of luxury. In all big towns, you see a lot of luxury. Big shopping malls, like in Wageningen or in Woluwe, and of course you see the bigger versions in the States. You find that in the big towns in India as well, with a lot of luxury. With hard rock cafes in there, with prices, European American prices. And then you go outside of these buildings, and you'd find people living there under a wooden frame with a blue plastic as a roof. And that's the way it is in India. But the population of 1.3 billion grows with the size of Belgium every quarter. Every quarter of the population grows with the size of Belgium. And the reason why I was there, we were doing some, not research, but some work around mobile phones. So this 1.3 billion people, with this 90% poor people, there's 400 million mobile phones and smartphones. There's 180 million televisions. Imagine the potential of that. Imagine the potential to attach services to that. And you see this happening. You see that the big integrators, system integrators, Indians, who originally looked towards the States or towards the UK or towards Europe to provide their services, they're providing services now more and more internally. And just imagine with this local market potential, with this developer potential, with this cheap labor, and the internet and the cloud, what the opportunities is for these kind of countries. And what the threat, for example, is for our economies. Without knowing, they're in our backyard. And by the way, that's happening. Already services are offered over the internet towards the local economies. These people speak English. Oh, sorry. There was another one I want to mention. That's Thomas Friedman. And Thomas Friedman talks about the world. And he says the world is flat. And he uses this metaphor to illustrate how the economic opportunity is the same for everybody. You can see the other side of the field, you can get it, and you can grab it. The competitive opportunity is the same for everyone. How comes, he says, the world became flat because of some flatteners, things that made the world flat, which are things like, for example, the fall of the Berlin Wall that opened the world to the east. Things like, for example, the internet, Netscape as a browser, search engines. Things like, for example, phenomena like offshoring and outsourcing. Complex production processes are cut in pieces, and things can be produced anywhere at any time around the world. The finished product is still there in time. How comes? Because of internet and very sophisticated, highly performing software. But he says, what you see is after the year 2000, all these flatteners, and he describes 10 of them, they start to interact with each other. And globalization goes quicker and quicker and quicker. Globalization does not accelerate linearly, it accelerates exponentially. And you get to a completely new world in which you need new business models. Your business model should be based on collaboration, product innovation, business model innovation, product innovation. Now, what do our economies want? What do our customers tell us? Our customers tell us they want three things. First of all, cheaper. They want to save costs. They want to save costs, they want to simplify things, they want to outsource things, and they want to make things more efficient. They want to implement new technologies that make them more productive. That's one thing. Second thing, it's a very big opportunity for them, but also a challenge, is attracting new people. What you see in our labor market is that getting qualified resources will become more and more difficult. Companies care about that. They care about attracting new talent, developing new talent, and keeping new talent. And the third thing, very important, is they care about green. First of all, because green represents a huge opportunity in terms of cost savings and efficiency. It was calculated for Belgium that only energy savings represent 5.2 billion euros a year, only for Belgium. But secondly, our entrepreneurs also want to be socially responsible entrepreneurs, more and more. All of this represents a number of challenges for our local economies. We're going to see competition accelerating. We're going to see competition from foreign markets, and it's going to go very quick. Companies have challenges to save costs, attracting talent, and be more efficient. But for our industry, this is a fantastic opportunity, as we are the only industry that can really support our companies with this, our customers with these kind of things. Modern tools, quickly implemented, quickly innovated, quickly deployed. And this is a huge challenge for us huge opportunity for us as an industry. Now, what about our world? How does ICT evolve? You know the first computer, the first mainframe? Anybody knows when that was born? Nobody? 46. First computer dates from 1946. Our industry is still a young industry. The first internet, at that time called ARPANET, 1969. And then came the personal computers, then came the networks, then came the browser, came the internet, which was widespread, then came search engines, and actually protocols like XML made the internet most of what it is today, at least. And now it's cloud. People are talking about cloud. So what is this about, this cloud? Simply said, making optimal usage of all this cloud, of all this internet-connected infrastructure. I will come back to that. That's not a definition. But I'm going to make an analogy with the... people talk about utility computing as well. So I'm going to make an analogy with the electricity market. If our industry is only 50, 60 years old, electricity market is 150 years old. It dates from the 19th century. But today we all find it normal that we get electricity in our homes. Do we think about the fact that it's strategic or not? We just get it. We take it for granted. It gets there, it's produced somewhere, it's distributed, but we still take it for granted. It comes out of the socket, and we consume it via machines, via devices. It can be an electric drill, or a mixer, or a shaving machine, or a vacuum cleaner. That's normal for us. Well, cloud computing and the ICT industry is going to go in the same direction. ICT services will be produced somewhere. We will not always care where, we will not always care how they get to us, but we will consume them. We will consume them via a browser, which is the electric socket and the internet, and then we will consume them via a device, and usually with a screen. Now, some people say, hey, that's back to the mainframe ages, right? It's central CPU processing, central storage, central control, and then it's virtualized, and then you use thin clients and green dumb screens. It's the same model, right? Is that the same model? It's completely, completely different. This is a completely different economy. Today we're using thousands, hundreds of thousands of computers worldwide with hundreds of thousands of developers worldwide. We're going from just running a couple of applications on the world's most expensive computers to running hundreds of thousands of applications on the world's least expensive computers. Our vision? Very simple. Three screens and a cloud. It's actually about three types of screens and a cloud. And it's about a paradigm shift. What's a paradigm shift? I looked it up myself. It's about a fundamental change in beliefs of what is possible at a certain moment in time. And the paradigm shift actually crosses three different types of screens. Small screens, medium screens, and big screens, all connected to each other via the internet, providing a seamless and completely transparent user experience. And when this cloud, when it starts to blossom, what you will see is that the interaction with these screens will change. This completely unified user experience will be there, and the way we interact with these screens will change. We will talk to the screens, they will talk to us. We will touch screens, but we will also work, for example, with gestures. And we'll come back later on. And there is really going to be the biggest revolution. There's endless opportunities, endless possibilities in that area. But there's two core principles. The first core principle is that the majority of the applications will be running in the cloud and on-site, both. The majority will be running in the cloud, but there will also be applications running on-premise. And the second core principle is that it will span a revolutionary number of devices, of types of devices, and screens. And the form factors will incredibly change. Today we just think as screens in our car, in the television, on a computer, a mobile phone, tomorrow they will be everywhere. They may be in your screen of your car. They may be in your, stethoscope or microscope, all connected with the internet, automatically uploading applications, for example. There's a lot of mindshare today about what's the cloud. And people, and they can't agree. People talk about private clouds and public clouds and hosted clouds, and people just can't agree. It doesn't really matter. What really matters is what are the underlying capabilities under that. And that's important. And the underlying capabilities are about scalability, about virtualization, about self-provisioning, about elasticity, and whatever list we can come up with. But this is what really matters. And this kind of capabilities, they can be consumed from anywhere. Whether that's a private cloud, whether that's a public cloud, or a hosted cloud, or any type of cloud. And this fundamental belief in this type of architecture, deployment, and development and usage, that is at the core of our vision. Now, what I would like to do with you now is have a look at what this would mean in practice and how the world will look like in a couple of years. 3, 5, 6 years from now? I don't know. Please play the movie. That's our vision. That's the platform we're building, bit by bit, piece by piece. I just took a couple of elements out of this platform. I didn't want to fill the slides completely full and untransparent. I just took out a couple of them. At the top, you see services that we already have in place today, typically towards the consumer market. At the bottom, typically towards the enterprise market. And it's clear that both are coming together very much. But I just want to give you a glimpse for the type of investment that we've been doing and the time spent already. We've been doing this for a while. If you look at Bing, for example, Bing Search, we're doing that since 11 years. We do 3 billion queries a month in our data centers. Bpost, for example, Exchange Online, SharePoint Online, one of the services towards professionals, we have today 1.5 million seats deployed worldwide. Windows Live IDs, for example, we've got over 500 million Windows Live IDs with more than 1 billion authentications a day. We've got quite some experiences in our data centers. By the way, ComScore rated the Microsoft property as the most engaged property worldwide in terms of time spent. We consume 15% of the time spent on the internet worldwide. That's on our Microsoft properties. If you would take Facebook and YouTube together, that would be 10%. And in Belgium, by the way, this number is 20%. Did you know we have 4.3 million Windows Live IDs, active Windows Live IDs. We've got quite some experience in this computing area. Now, how do we view this cloud? Like I said before, it's about the underlying capabilities. And on top of that, you've got choice. Sometimes it will make sense to have an application on-premise. Sometimes it will make more sense to have an application in the cloud. Sometimes you run a homogeneous environment, sometimes heterogeneous. Sometimes you want to lease and rent, sometimes you want to buy. Sometimes you want it in CapEx, sometimes you want it in OpEx. But there's a fundamental thing, that is that there is choice. And about our intentions, we're 100% committed to the cloud. Today, 70% of our developers are working on this cloud. By the end of the year, it will be 90%. We launched a campaign, internally as well as externally, where we say, we're all in. And I was actually watching Steve Ballmer when he announced this. I said, yeah, big deal, we're all in. We're all in everything together, right? But what it actually means, it's a term of playing poker. When you say, okay, this is an all-in, you bet all your money on one bet. And this is what it's about. We're betting our company on the cloud. Now, how do we see this? As one cloud continuum. And the cloud continuum spans the private cloud to the public cloud, and everything that's in between. And there are different layers. And the layers build up from the infrastructure to the platform to the software as a service. And we keep on building our own data centers. And all the developments we make for our own data centers, we also put them at the disposal of our customers. For example, we have a dynamic data center toolkit for hosters at the disposal of our hosters. We've got a dynamic infrastructure toolkit for system center for our customers. And I know the name changed, my apologies, I don't know the new name. But we've got a lot of building blocks filled in already. We've got an Azure platform today, which is typically both infrastructure and platform as a service, and we've got SaaS in place today. For example, typically the BPaaS services. But what you will see is that there will be choice. And sometimes it makes a lot of sense to put things in the cloud, then it will not make sense to put things in the cloud. A consumer, for example, has got a lot very different requirements than a professional user. He will want a service level agreement. He will want compliancy. He will want availability. A consumer may want different things. He may be okay with seeing publicity, for example. That's very different. Big companies and small companies may have different requirements. But also the type of application, for instance. We migrated one application to the cloud. The 20 kilometers of Brussels. We put that to our Azure platform. The site was always down when you needed it. Because during the whole year, there's a little workload, right? Little capacity needed. But just the month before and the month after, everybody wants to subscribe, and then everybody wants to see the picture and the videos. There's a big, big peak. Building the infrastructure to cope with this peak and maintain that all over the year would be very expensive. This is typically a situation where you bring certain type of applications to the cloud. We brought that to our Azure platform. These people only pay for those 2 months, this big capacity they need. The rest of the year, they pay flat. At the same time, an e-banking application, I don't know, may not make so much sense to bring that to the cloud. In the same way that I spoke about electricity, there's another analogy with the electricity market. Electricity market is evolving as well. Our carbon fuels are endless. We need to be careful. So we really need to think about how we're going to handle that towards the future. We still have 45 years. We're not going to use cokes because that's too polluting. So 45 years we still have. So we're going to have to reform, rebuild this electricity network as well. And what you're going to get, the big electricity producers of today, they will still be there. I think we will be investing in fusion technology. I think that will be continuing. You will get a new middle market, if you want, of companies investing in new types of electricity production, like windmills, like solar, like, for example, it seems that algae culture seems very interesting and not polluting. And what you will also get is some homes will produce electricity through windmills, through solar, and sometimes they will produce more than they consume, and they want to inject it to the net. We need to construct such a big network, a smart grid, through which the distribution of electricity is arranged, and also the inter-billing is arranged. That's quite an analogy. Different type of providers, and there will be choice. Sometimes, however, it's going to be a question of scale. In our Chicago data center, for instance, we stuff 6-meter-long containers with 2,000 servers, all standard components, switches, switches, routers, all standard components, standard workloads, big data centers operated by 4 people. When a certain number of the servers fall out, we just pull out the container, bring a new container in. We operate this 100 times less expensive than many of our customers can do. Email, for instance, even if it's as strategic as electricity, email belongs in the cloud. Email belongs in the cloud for a small and for a big organization. But it's going to be a place for everybody. Next year, the investment in ICT will be $3 trillion. 20% of that will be invested in data centers. That's 600 million. If you take Amazon, you take Microsoft, you take Google, you take whatever together, they will never be able to invest that kind of money in 1 year. We need the whole ecosystem to make this investment in the cloud, to create a very dynamic infrastructure. Dynamic private clouds, dynamic hosted clouds, dynamic partner clouds, allowing virtual machines and applications to switch between environments, all managed by System Center. And that's a huge opportunity for us together. And I invite you for the remainder of the day to explore with us how we can exploit this opportunity together. So let us look at the agenda. There's 2 tracks, and it's actually quite easy. If you're sales, you follow the first sales track. If you're marketing and business unit manager, and I think you can read the rest, you follow the second track. There will be a break at around 4 o'clock. You go back to the same track and the same room as where you were before. Don't miss the keynote speech of Peter Hinsen at 6 o'clock. Peter Hinsen is an authority in the world of ICT, and especially applied ICT. How can you use ICT to make a competitive advantage and to innovate, both in economy as in society? He's a really very well-known speaker, advisor to many of the CIOs and CEOs and CXOs. He's about to release a new book tomorrow, and I think we're going to get a glimpse of that book around 6 o'clock. So please don't miss this. What we're going to do next is just have a look at one of these building blocks for this cloud vision. We're going to look at how we will deal with gestures. Gestures that today you will see in some toys, if you want, but also applied now in applications in healthcare. Already doing that, for example, in a Microsoft Innovation Center in Mons. You will soon see some applications on the market using typically that technology that we're using in Xbox, in Kinect, sorry. I will see you later. Give the word to Dries now.